Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sans Pants Radio. This show has taken a bit of a break.
This episode of Movie Maintenance was recorded live at Some Velvet Morning in Melbourne.
Yeah! I'm gonna clap too!
Great! Yeah, there are, So, to kick it off, welcome to a very special end of year, year in review movie maintenance episode where some years just need reviewing. I'm Gabe.
I'm Damien.
I'm Kat.
Sean and Handsome Tom have elected to not be here today. Sean, for reasons I don't know. Handsome Tom said he's gonna turn up late, which usually means I'm gonna turn up never. So, where were you? Yeah, undoubtedly.
I imagine he's seen a butterfly and...
Yes, and he's sort of veered off to follow that. So essentially today we're going to sort of, I guess, have a look over the year that's been. But I thought what we'd do to kind of kick it off, just because, you know, we have to get the elephant in the room out of the room. Has everyone seen Star Wars? Okay, we know that there are people in this room who haven't seen Star Wars. We're
so
not going to
spoil
anything.
So get ready for spoilers!
Yeah, so that bit where Rey's mum turns out... Anyway, So, what did we think of Star Wars? Let's get this out of the way before we discuss the year more generally.
Cool. I loved it.
Yeah, loved it.
Me too. Cool, that's done. Moving on.
I was in this podcast, what was it, Punk the Death Star?
Oh, yeah,
like
wow.
That.
What a bunch of sour grapes.
Negative opinions.
They just, what was wrong with them? Like,
it was just
listening to three sad people be sad at each other.
People.
It was miserable.
Yeah.
No, I don't know, it's funny with Star Wars because people may or may not know that I have some opinions on last year's masterpiece, Rogue One. Those opinions are not kind. And look, I guess Rogue One to me was a bit of an extension of a lot of qualms I already had about The Force Awakens, which was that it kind of felt, and Star Wars Rebels as well by extension, which is that it's kind of felt like since Disney's come in, the franchise has been so terrified of remotely evoking the prequels that it's doing whatever it can to like, to refer back to the original films, and it's pandering to nostalgia to a ridiculous degree. So when Last Jedi came out, I was excited because, I mean, it's Star Wars. I'm still going to be excited for Star Wars, but it was very muted excitement. It was like, okay, cool. So we're going to get essentially a variation on Empire Strikes Back, and there'll be lots of crowd-pleasing moments. There'll be lots of scenes where it's like, hey, remember that thing you liked from that Star Wars film? Here it is again. How good's that? But I was really pleasantly surprised. And I think what's kind of been really strange about Last Jedi is that listening to the Plumbing Boys do their What Did We Think of Last Jedi episode, we actually agreed on what worked and what didn't work. And most people I talk to seem to feel the same way. Like, there's stuff that people are like, hey, that was really great, and there's stuff people are like, hey, that was really crap. And it's all the same stuff. It just seems to be this weird film where it's divided people in that how you feel about the film depends on how strongly you came down on either side.
Right. I think it's a matter of, if you want a sort of that, I'm seeing something I've seen before, nostalgia, or if you're ready for it to go in a semi-new direction.
And it's a surprising movie. Like, it does things that we didn't expect or think a Disney Star Wars film could do. There were moments where it's like...
Yeah, there were moments of Mark Hamill that I can't unsee at the beginning that I didn't expect.
And there are moments with Mark Hamill where it's like, oh, wow, You can act.
And
same with, I mean, I don't really want to speak ill of the dead here or anything, but like in Force Awakens, when Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford shared scenes, it was like, one of you has been consistently on screen for the last 40 years. One of you has not.
Yeah.
One of you is really struggling to perform with the other one and not naming names, but Carrie, your face doesn't move properly anymore. However, that said, that problem wasn't there in Last Jedi. She was excellent
in
it. Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a case of rose-tinted goggles because she's obviously left us, but I don't think it was.
Her and Hamill both brought it. They were exceptional.
Soulful, believable performances that made me feel things, which is something I thought Star Wars had long since lost the ability
to
do. So we all like Last Jedi. It had problems. We'll probably talk about them more extensively in another episode at another time. But getting that out of the way, So I thought we'd kick off with what were our favourites of this year, film-wise?
So doing film,
Here is something Damon has prepared earlier. Look,
I'm organised. I'm on top of this. Kath, not so much. So we're just talking top films of the year.
Yeah. I was going to say top five, but
I mean, I don't want to put that pressure on myself. I made it top five, so you've wasted my time. I mean, Boss Baby, obviously. That's up there. No, Dunkirk was accepted.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of those ones, we talked about this the other week when we were out. And it's like, oh, that's like, as soon as, I think my fiance mentioned it, he's like, oh, that was like one of the greatest films of this year. Like, how did I forget it? Probably because there's been too many superhero movies lately. But it was exceptional in its delivery and its tone and like everything. Like, it was unlike a movie I've seen before.
I actually heard this in this other podcast I was listening to recently made this really interesting point about Dunkirk, where it was like, Dunkirk was great, but it's not a film I want to watch again because it was almost too perfect. Like, I watched it and I was like, cool, I've had that experience.
Yeah, because it is an experience.
Yeah.
Like, so much of it is non-verbal. Like, it's just watching the terror in their eyes.
Yeah,
it was absolutely. So entrenched in the scene. And, like, apparently he didn't even want to write a script originally. He's just like, no, I've got the outline. Well done, Nolan, all right. But it kind of works because, these performances are freaking outstanding and gut-wrenching to watch.
Yeah,
and
you're like, for sure.
Oh, war is fucked. Like, war is bad. Why do we keep doing this?
I don't want to be in a war.
So, Dunkirk for me was...
Yeah, it was good.
Top five, even though we're not doing top five. Fuck you. I've already mentioned Boss Baby, so we can cross that one off.
Where does the masterpiece known as Justice League fit in? In your estimation?
I've got that one on worst five for the year.
Oh, okay, cool. We'll
and that just fills all five spots, actually.
One for each member of the league.
Yeah, one for each member of the league, yes. Big Sick.
Yeah, yep. Awesome.
Yeah. Probably my favourite.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm calling it. It was, I don't know, like, comedies, I don't think we've had a great comedy for a while. Like, you look at the other comedies this year, I can't even remember what it was called, the one with Amy Poehler and Will Ferrell, anyone.
Oh.
The House.
The House, yeah. It was unwatchable.
Unwatchable.
Especially for Amy Poehler and Will Ferrell, that's shockingly bad. Yeah. Like, it was terrible.
And where this one, like, it had what comedy, like, so many comedies rely on just, oh, here are some gags. Have some gags, guys. We'll throw in some funny gags. You need the heart and you need the story as well, which Big Sick brought in fucking
truckloads of that.
And I don't know, it was just a step above any other comedy I've seen for years, I reckon.
Yeah, it was. I watched it on the plane actually coming back from Scotland, where I may or may not have seen Nessie. And it was, it was a really surprising one for me because it was just something I was like, oh, I'm not going to have to think too much in this. I'm just going to put it on.
Yeah.
And by the time I got the end of it, I was like, man, it's in my top five as well. But good. I was like, it might even be my favorite film of the year. It was one that I was just like, wow, it's just everything about it just works so well. All the characters are engaging. I want to find out what happens. It's very likable. It's very funny. It's very believable.
And it's brutally honest at times.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And satisfying. Really satisfying. Like, you get to the end and you're like, yeah, good.
Yeah, and like the reactions from the characters are logical. Like, she doesn't just fall in love with him when she awakens or any of that friggin' nonsense.
No, it all makes sense.
Other movies. Like, I mean, obviously, probably helped because obviously based on real events.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Which I didn't know. I watched it right up until the last 10 minutes. And then for whatever reason, I couldn't finish it. And I went to Gabe, I was like, it's so good. And it's like a metaphor for like recovering from 9/11. And Gabe was like, I'm pretty sure it's just a true story.
She's like,
I was like, no, Gabe, I know it's a metaphor.
I want everybody to like, to appreciate the acting abilities I had to bring to bear
so
to not be like, what the
like,
fuck is wrong with you? It was like, huh. Not sure about that, Kath, but interesting interpretation.
And then I watched the final 10 minutes and I was like, oh no. No. It's a real story. Yeah.
Why did you
I went to it and I was like, did you hear it was a real story?
Yes. It's like, not a unless like knows unless Kumail like legitimately played out his life to make a statement about 9/11 and recovery, which I somehow doubt.
I still think it could be a beautiful metaphor. I retain that it could still be interpreted that way.
Moving on, Damon, what else did you like this year?
Alright, what else is on my list? Spider-Man Homecoming came on my list, which I didn't expect. Like even at the end of last year when it was sort of trailers were out for it, and it was like, it looks good for sure, but it's another Spider-Man movie. Like,
yeah.
How can they possibly do it again and make it awesome? And then they did. And you're like, oh, okay. And I think what really worked is that it was just a well-structured film with like a decent villain, a believable villain that wasn't out to fucking destroy the world. And like, even like Thor, which was great film, lots of fun, but the villain was garbage. Like,
What I kind of liked about Homecoming, and it's weird because I would kind of say that it probably sits as my favorite Marvel film to date.
Yeah, okay.
And part of that might be the surprise factor, but it was sort of the fact that I watched it and I was like, it's got a really likable main character.
Yes.
It's got a great story. It's really funny, but not in that kind of forced, quippy Marvel way.
Right.
And it doesn't have some ridiculous third act where a big lightning beam from the sky is destroying another flying
thing. Exactly.
Flying
yeah.
I mean, there was a flying thing that crashed in the city, but it was only a plane.
Right.
Which, by Marvel standards, is like relatively conservative.
Right. Yeah.
So that alone, I thought, it won points for.
Yeah.
And it was also the fact that it had an actual theme.
Yeah.
Because, like, Spider-Man, like, normally in Marvel films, it's like, oh, we just have this villain who wants to do bad things for this arbitrary reason, and they have weird, awkward monologues and, you know, whatever, Malekith in Thor the Dark World.
Or,
you know, Marvel alien villain number 27. But the fact that the Vulture actually had rock-solid motives,
yes,
and that his motives actually reflected Spider-Man, like at the end where it's like, oh, Spider-Man, you can join the Avengers. And he's like, no, because someone has to stand up for the little guy.
Yeah.
And the bit where the Vulture's like, you and me, Stark doesn't care about people like you and me. Like, yeah, the Avengers are off fighting, you know, their intergalactic threats and whatever.
Right, yeah.
But nobody gives a shit about the little guy.
Yes.
And that theme set up at the start with sort of, you know, Stark's big business coming in and being like, yep, I'm going to do this, not caring about who gets screwed over in the process.
Yeah.
I thought was fantastic. Like a Marvel film that actually has something to say.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
What?
Also,
who expected that from a 2017 Spider-Man film?
Right. Yeah. While still maintaining all the stuff that makes a great Marvel film, as well as it was the first time I saw Spider-Man on screen and thought, oh, that's the Spider-Man I love from the comics.
Like, yeah.
He's actually in high school and staying in high school. Like, Tom Holland was exceptional. But, yeah, like, that character is the Spider-Man from the comics. The point is that he's looking after the little guy and he's so ill-equipped for the role he's in, but he's God damn it, he's doing his best.
He was mega endearing.
I love it, yeah.
What else have you got?
All right, Get Out was obviously on there.
Get Out was...
that was...
exceptional.
Excellent, which, truth be told, I only saw it yesterday. I'm like, we're doing year in review, and I hadn't watched, like...
How'd you miss it?
I just was, like, on my to-watch list, and then, like, I had it, but I still hadn't got around to watching it. I'm really busy, all right? Don't judge me. So yesterday we watched, I hadn't seen It either, so that was a movie marathon day. But no, Get Out was so good. Like, I even knew it was going to be good, and I was still blown away by how good it was.
It's an excellent movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, the theme's obviously great. It's so layered and terrifying. Like, was it up for a comedy?
The Golden Globes, I think Get Out is up for best comedy.
Which is ridiculous.
And Three Billboards is up for best drama. And I don't know if they've had advanced screenings for Three Billboards.
They know what comedy is.
It's much funnier than Get Out.
If they think the white people being racist is comedy, that's not true.
Yeah.
That's the terror. Like, that's horror right there because it's so real.
It's satirical, but I wouldn't call it comedic.
I guess
if those two things can exist in isolation from each other, which I think they can in the case of Get Out.
Sure, yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
You know, The Martian was a comedy. Like, notoriously, they've been a little bit funny about that, what they define as comedy.
Throw a joke in there and you're a freaking comedy. Well, like I said, I watched It and Get Out yesterday. It had as many jokes as Get Out, I would say. Like, even when they... everyone's seen It, I can spoil it. I'm going to spoil it. Even when they defeat the clown... There you go. The first line from one of the kids is like, well, I know what I'm writing for my summer report or whatever. Like, here's a joke. And they had enough jokes in It that I would say, it was equal to, if not more than, Get Out. So comedy, no. But it was an exceptional film. And what I really loved about it was the way it kept telling you information while maintaining the mystery. Like, it didn't be like, oh, let's save all the mystery for the end for one giant reveal. You're like, oh, no, she's hypnotizing him. We get that she's hypnotizing
him.
We still don't know what the answer is. Oh, the others are probably hypnotized. I still don't know what the fuck is going on. Like, it was great. And then even when the big reveal did come, like, I didn't see it coming a mile away. It was only, like, maybe a few minutes before. Again, I'm worried about spoilers. But, bigger twist, I guess.
I guess where the comedy kind of comes in, if anything, comes from the fact that the conclusion of Get Out is almost more... Because when it came to the big reveal of what they're doing and what the intention is, I was kind of like, that's ridiculous. But the satirical point it was making made it worthwhile.
Like, it was so zany. Like, even the darker stuff was still quite quirky. So it gets muddled, but it's still, I would
what
not
it had
say it's a
to
comedy.
Say was unsettling.
Yeah.
And how it said it, particularly towards the end,
yeah.
was in a way that was, yes, heightened, but acceptable because of the what it was. I'm really trying to talk around this film in case you haven't seen it. You really should watch it. It's really good.
Yeah.
What else did you have?
Just watch it. All right, moving on. So I also had Logan. Again, so I think it was just at the very start of the year, but it counts.
Yeah.
And again, another comic book movie that, like, we had so many bad Wolverine films that I was like, I don't care. But then the trailer came out and you're like, maybe. This might be good. And even then you're like, but it can't be as good as the trailer's promising, because how many good trailers have we seen that have been shockingly bad movies or that just show parts that aren't in the movie? And then, no, it was real good.
Well, the trailer kind of promised something that was darker, grittier, and more emotional than anything we'd really seen from an X-Men movie before.
As well as,
and delivered.
And delivered. As well as not relying on the comic book tropes. We didn't have some fucking town-destroying scene at the end. We didn't have some super bad villain.
Was it the director who was like, if you're expecting a CGI fuckathon, you're not getting it?
Which was true.
I think my thing with Logan was that, like, it was fantastic until the point where it remembered it was a comic book movie. It was like, can we have a grounded, believable villain? No, clone of Wolverine.
Just
make it Sabretooth. Just make it Sabretooth, and you're fine. That's the only maintenance that film needs.
I'm not disagreeing. So I agree with that 100%. Except for the fact that I still loved it. Wolverine. Look, I gave myself a pretty good chuckle at that. And then last one, which was a special mention, because like I did do my five, was another Logan Lucky.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
You're garbage. No, it wasn't like the best film ever, but it was just a very satisfying film. I don't know why I'm talking to you. Kath, have you seen it? You saw it? It was very sad. Did you enjoy it?
I love heist films. Okay, so I'm a little biased. I love, and with this, they're kind of rare at the moment, so I was really satisfied at any heist film. But yeah, I loved it. It was fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed myself.
Nice performances. Fairly solid script. And kind of went a few ways I didn't think. Like, I kind of didn't know which way I was going to go with the ending.
Yeah. Well, that's Stephen Sondheim.
Yes.
Am I saying that right? Yeah. I mean, he's great.
He's great. Yeah. So that was on there as well.
And what about you, Kath? What jumped out at you from this year?
Well, I mean, Damo's actually touched. So I did a top.
Damo covered a lot of mine as well.
I know.
I stole them all.
I'm really annoyed. I'm curious.
And I did my homework.
No, I mean, my number one film was The Big Sick as well. I loved that film.
We're all kind of in agreement.
It was
Yeah, it was what we needed. I don't know.
Also, if you think about, what film did I have, the strongest, reaction to? I felt the most watching The Big Sick out of anything else this year. It was.
And obviously you didn't know much about it coming in because you're.
No, clearly I did not know much. But, yeah. And I mean, it's kind of interesting because it's a story that I think is very far from my experiences in my life.
Yes.
And but yet I still could completely feel those feelings and empathize.
Yeah.
And I think that's really good storytelling. This isn't in my top five, but the film Goat, I don't know if I think it came out on Netflix.
No,
it's a film about masculinity and when bros kind of get together. And I sat down to watch it thinking this is so far from me as a person and anything I've experienced, but I felt
it. You don't get together with your bros?
Yeah, I don't get together with my bros, unfortunately, but I watched it and I completely empathized with what that guy was going through. And I think that's powerful storytelling when you can take someone out of their own experiences and really feel what someone else is feeling.
It's also kind of the job of any movie though, isn't it?
Whether it's
a Goat or a Spider-Man Homecoming, it's I can't jump around on buildings and pull together breaking ships or whatever.
But for a moment, you feel like you can.
If you can somehow put me in the experience of that character, no matter how outlandish or removed from my own experiences they are, then you've done a good job. I think for me, the film of the year, and it's a kind of cheating because it hasn't technically come out in Australia yet, but there were advanced screenings with Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, surprising no one.
Shocker!
which was written and directed by Martin McDonagh, who is my favourite writer, so I was excited. Because if you haven't seen the trailer, do yourself a favour and watch the trailer.
How many times do you think you've seen the trailer?
I don't.
No.
It would be over 100.
Wow.
Okay. I say that.
I mean, I asked the question knowing it was going to be a dumb answer, but that, wow.
There were just mornings where it's like, I've rolled over. This is something I've literally done. I've woken up, I've rolled over, and I've glanced over at Molly, my girlfriend who's sitting in the audience, and I've been like,
nah.
And I've sort of got out my phone, and I've put my headphones in, and I've watched the trailer. It's like I'm secretly watching porn while in bed.
I mean, that's borderline abuse.
I'm out with friends and we're like addicted to something. I'm like, oh, have you heard about this Three Billboards film? Like I say as if, I haven't studied.
It's a shocker, right? I just heard about it today, guys.
But I'm like, oh, have you seen the trailer? And they're like, oh, maybe. I'm like, let's watch it again. Oh, maybe. Yeah. That probably means you haven't seen it. No, you remember it. Yeah.
You've
watched it
with me. Yeah. You've watched it with me at least twice. Yeah, and that would be a small fraction.
You've shown me. I remember telling you, like, yeah, I saw it today. You're like, yeah, let's watch it.
Yeah. It was exactly like that.
Okay, yeah, right.
It's... Is that, you don't have a screen. No, it's Three Billboards, is a film that if anybody's seen in Bruges, if anybody has seen Seven Psychopaths sucked ass, but in Bruges is amazing. Three Billboards is more in Bruges than Seven Psychopaths, but it's a film that it does lose a point because it builds to an amazing moment in the middle of the film that after which it's a very brave moment you don't expect. And then after that, the film doesn't really know where to go. And so up in that whole first half of the film, you're sitting there being like, and there were moments where I was thinking, this is one of the best films I've ever seen. There are scenes in this film that I am sitting there on the edge of my seat being like, everything about this, the writing, the acting, everything that's going on is incredible.
Yeah.
And then in the middle, this is a moment where you're like, fuck. And then after that, the film's kind of like, oh shit.
Where do we go now?
And it's still
right.
Good and it still makes a point. And it's a really beautifully made film, but it does lose a little bit for that momentum. I guess like what was a bit funny for me is that, like, of all my top films of the year, which would be like that, The Disaster Artist I thought was fantastic.
Yes.
Homecoming, yeah. The Last Jedi. It's weird that a Spider-Man film and a superhero film, sorry, Spider-Man film and a Star Wars film both made my top five this year, but
right.
They did. And then, like, even...
Disney know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's with none of those films for me were, like, five-star sort of home runs.
Yeah, yeah.
But all of them had enough going on.
No, I mean, but your favourite films that aren't, like, the best structured films or the most, like, you know, perfectly
No, like,
critiqued
Dunkirk
films.
Was probably objectively a better made film than any of those.
Right.
But I didn't feel as much, or I guess feel as much that I would want to revisit in Dunkirk as I did in
right.
any of those.
Like I did with Boss Baby.
Yeah. No,
yeah.
Or the Emoji Movie.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't watched the fucking Emoji Movie. My name's not Sean
I got
Carney.
Really excited. He hasn't watched it, because he's
No,
garbage.
But he has to.
He was meant to see it at the cinemas. I wanted him to sit there and I wanted to watch his hateful reaction.
What was the deal we made at the start of the year that, like, if I watched Justice League, Tom would have to watch it.
Yes.
And Sean would have to watch the Emoji Movie.
And two.
Sean did not agree to this. But I watched Justice League and Tom's watched it, so Sean has to watch the Emoji Movie. I'm sorry. On the note of the Emoji Movie, what was the worst film of the year? I feel like we're probably all going to be more or less in agreement on this.
I mean, I've already stated it, but Justice League.
Justice League. Did anybody in the room like Justice League?
Yeah.
Can I?
So, yeah, the door's just at the back.
Can I ask? No. Like, can I ask why? Sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot. Welcome to the show. But why?
You put me on the spot, but like, it was just kind of, it was what I wanted from it. It was an improvement, step in the right direction.
From what?
From Batman vs. Kath, how do you feel about Batman vs. Superman?
Can we not?
One of the greatest. I was actually going to put that as my top five films for you because I watched it. Three times this year, the first time this year. And, it's a great, I don't know, there's no
You're
point even defending
me,
it because I know that everyone hates it, but I loved it. I watched it the next night.
For those of you listening at home, I'm shaking my head and internally I'm thinking, this is what it feels like to lose a friend. And it hurts. It really hurts.
I mean, everyone has a mum. That was powerful, okay? Everyone.
I mean, everyone knows someone called Martha.
Okay? Plot twist, but it's, so true. I literally, like, when I saw it, I was like, oh, we do all have a mum. And it was, what? You like them, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, what was that thing you were saying about the symbolism of the scene with the bathtub? Because I really don't quite understand that.
I don't think I do either.
I don't want to
hear really explain it, but it's him, it's Superman being like, he's in his clothes, Gabe. He's in everyday clothes, and he's so in control all the time, and he just gets wet.
No one's been wet with their clothes before.
I love it. I love it so much. It was like my favorite scene.
Okay. Are you tearing
just
up?
10 out of 10. No, I'm laughing. Wow.
Anyway, so I suppose, coming from that sky high standard, Justice League really going to go up.
It was worse than Batman vs. Superman. We have to all agree that. It's better than Justice League.
For me, it was. And no disrespect, like I honestly believe, and I have said this so many times, that nothing can take away from the experience you had in that cinema. If you loved it, enjoyed it. It's like when people are like, what the fuck's wrong with you? You like Last Jedi, which I've heard a lot. I'm like, no, I fucking love Last Jedi because it made... And when people give me shit about Jurassic World as well, I'm like, fuck off. That film had dinosaurs that were smashed into other dinosaurs. You can't take that away from me. Yeah. And the trailer for Fallen Kingdom also, it's like dinosaurs plus a volcano. Like, how can you go wrong? Like, you can't take that away.
How many times have you seen the Jurassic World trailer?
So what I'm trying to say here is, no, I have absolutely no judgment for somebody who enjoys any stuff that we don't enjoy. But for me, Justice League was like, I sat there watching it and I just felt myself sinking deeper and deeper into the chair as it went on. And as I went in, I bought like a jug of beer to drink through the film. And by about halfway through the film, that jug of beer was gone. And I was looking at it and I felt this growing sense of desperation in that I don't have enough alcohol to get through this. Holy shit. Like everything about it, I just thought, I mean, we've spoken about it, Movie Maintenance. We've discussed its many, many shortcomings. I don't think we need to beat that dead horse anymore. What is going to be
dead on arrival.
Yes. What is going to be fascinating is where that film, where DC goes from here.
Because Aquaman's in the can. That's coming
out. Yeah, so that has to happen, unfortunately. Yeah. And like, but what
there'll
I
there'll be another
is,
Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman. Well, actually, just Wonder Woman was the only film that wasn't mentioned that I put in my top five. Everything else you guys covered.
Yeah, that was
I put Wonder Woman.
I just don't want to put too many comic book films in there.
I know,
like,
there's
this
so
many. It was stupid. Oddly good.
I think it is going to be fascinating going forward because it's like, you can't pull the Dark Universe where it's like you released a Mummy film that everyone sort of received with a collective shrug.
Yeah.
And now you've released three films that everybody received with a collective. No, stop. Don't. We don't want this. And then you release one good one. And now it's like DC have like so... Like, I didn't think DC could dig a deeper hole, but it's like, no, the only thing they could do worse than releasing like the double whammy of BVS vs. Suicide Squad was release one good film and then another shit film, because now they can't reboot. They're not allowed. They have to keep making Wonder Woman films with Gal Gadot, which means they have to stick with this universe.
Yes.
I didn't think they could fuck themselves more thoroughly, but they somehow managed it.
They are the masters. Oh, I mean, you can't deny them that.
Are DC run by Tommy Wiseau?
I think he's like a creative executive.
He's got to have
his
been
vision.
Involved.
Yeah.
So I guess worst of the year, now that we're all in agreement on that.
Well, you mentioned Mummy. I had Mummy on mine as well.
Of worst,
mostly because I genuinely love the Brendan Fraser movies, or at least the first two. I don't know if he was in the third one, but I genuinely love them. And this one, the Tom Cruise reboot, didn't bring any of the bits I loved about the Mummy into it. So, and as well as that, it tried to start a franchise that dropped straight.
There actually is, because I watched the Mummy on the plane and I was like, the first 20 minutes of it, I was like, hang on, this is really fun. And then the rest of then it got to the point where it was like, references to build the franchise.
Yeah, no. I mean, standing with other films this year, because the other one on my list is fucking Pirates of the Caribbean, which was utter garbage.
Oh, that was so shit.
Painful.
Why did we go and watch it?
I mean, I watched it. That was my plane film.
This franchise wasn't going to get better.
No.
Why did we go again?
Yeah. Well, like, so I watched that one on the plane, right? And I'm not a good flyer. Turbulence gets me, like, clutching the armrest. I was wanting turbulence. I'm like, give me something I can actually feel. Like, something that's less painful than watching this film. But no, Pirates of the Caribbean was
yeah, it was
friggin'
fucking abysmal.
Ugh.
It's actually, the funny thing is, none of those are actually the worst film I saw this year. The worst film I saw this year was hopefully a film I don't think anybody in this room will have watched. A film with Richard Gere called The Dinner that...
Oh, yeah, I saw the trailer for it.
I went and saw it because my Austrian father was like, son, you need to watch this film, The Dinner. And I'm like...
Wait, was this one of his text reviews?
He called me and he insisted that I go and see this film.
Oh, he called.
And he told me, he was like, you have to see this film, you have to see this film. Didn't tell me why, he just said you have to see this film. And I go, I went and saw The Dinner, and The Dinner is a film about... it's the kind of thing... It's an amazing premise. It's two couples... So it's two brothers and their respective wives. They get together for dinner. Basically, they're all very rich and very opulent, and very spoiled. And their sons have been at a party and they've walked out the party drunk and they found a homeless woman in a phone shelter or an ATM shelter, one of those things.
Right.
And they've set her on fire. And basically, they've just done that drunkenly. They've accidentally immolated this woman.
Has anyone done that while drunk? What a premise.
But the thing is, so basically the parents are getting together and the whole thing is, our sons have done this horrible thing. What do we do about it? We're the only ones who know.
Oh, so they're
the only ones who know the sons have done it.
Do we cover it up?
Do we come forward? And then Richard Gere's character is like a politician and it's an amazing premise.
It's a great premise. Yeah, that's actually a very good premise. Yeah.
The problem is that the film that you can see the screenwriter of the film having gone into this being like, oh, great premise. Yes, I've got this. Then being like, okay, I have to have a
second act.
So literally that isn't addressed. And you know from the start of the film what they've done. It's set up at the start of the film.
Okay.
The whole film is literally every time the character's like, we need to talk about this, something happens to distract them. There's like a lengthy scene where they go to the site of Gettysburg and it's like 20 minutes of the film where they just walk around being like, that's where Abraham Lincoln was. That's where this was. I'm like, what the fuck? Anything. Go back to the burnt homeless woman. I want to find out what happened there.
Killed the homeless woman.
And it's honestly the closest I've ever come to walking out of a film.
Oh, like, wow.
I was sitting there watching it, and every time I'd be like, it would just go on, I'd be like, fuck this, I'd grab my bag, I'd get up, I'd go to walk out. I've never in my adult life walked out of a film. I sat through Justice League. I'd gone up to walk out, and every time, that was one of the characters on screen would be like, now we need to talk with this. I'm like, alright, right. I'm here already. I went to Cheap Tuesday, I only paid $7 for it. I sit back down, and then it goes for like another 20 minutes without doing anything. The meat of the conflict happens in the last 5 minutes, and then isn't resolved. And what? I walked out of that film, and I called my dad, and I was like, why did you do this?
Is this like a classic Austrian prank? Is that what this is?
No, you know what his exact thing was? He goes, now you know what not to do.
Oh.
Thanks, Dad.
Well, no, bravo.
I went to film school to learn what not to do.
Legend.
Thanks, Father.
I love your dad. Oh, he's so good.
Great. It's not only $7 that I could have spent on a happy hour pint.
Wait, $7?
Cheap Tuesday. It was 2 hours of my life that I could have spent staring at my
what
wall.
What not to do.
He like, knew.
That is
he
the
knew
best.
He knew what he was doing.
Oh, it just... Oh, it,
he's
it
a brilliant man.
But he was right.
He was right.
He was right. He did you a favor. You say thank you.
Yeah. No,
you'd
no,
be a good son.
No, I refuse. I flat out refuse.
Yeah, get him the DVD. Get him the DVD as a Christmas present.
Like, oh, no, I just, actually, you know what? Yes, I will.
That can be a new Christmas movie. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, well, good. Getting you back, Dad.
Well, I walked out of a film this year, and it was the first film I've ever walked out of. So I put it in my list. It wasn't that awful, but I was on, I thought,
sorry, what,
I missed that. I walked out of a film. Did anyone see Hounds of Love? It was like a little, anyway, I walked out of it. It was the first film I walked out of ever in the cinema. And it was
you,
it was unwatchable.
You didn't just go on your phone like you usually do?
No, I didn't. Because I don't do it that often. I've got this reputation.
Right, because you fall asleep
now.
Instead.
Because I fall asleep instead. Okay. So the much classier version of going on your phone. No, I walked out because it was a POV shot of a dog being, I want, like, no one wants to know, but quite graphically hurt. Oh, and shit. I was like, nope. But has anyone been in the Nova? And it's like a maze. And I walked back into the cinema without realizing, because I was like, ah!
Wait, you went back into the
cinema. And then I went in, and I was there again, and I was like, I can't not see this. But I put up my worst films, because it was, I didn't think it was justified.
That is
horribleness.
The most Cat Atkins I've ever heard.
Thank you.
I walked out of the film in a rage, and I got lost in the cinema, and I ended up back in the same film.
And then your answer is to just go, shrug, I guess I'm watching it.
I guess I'm here now.
No, I left again, and then when the
and then you got
stopped,
back again.
Actually, I've got to say.
Well, I had a friend in there. I wasn't just going to leave forever.
I have walked out of a film before. When I was 5, I walked out of The Hunchback of Notre Dame because of the bit where the hunchback's dad tells him, you're not to leave. And then he leaves, and I was like, fuck, he's going to get in trouble, I'm out.
If he's leaving, I'm leaving. I don't want to deal with the repercussions.
I was 5, and I was watching with my dad, and my dad, I'm really, really singing his praises today. But I was like, Dad, I'm scared, I don't want to watch this film anymore. And Dad was like, all right, you go find Mum. He stayed! I had to walk out and find Mum in the shopping centre, and Dad stayed and watched the rest of that, you know, mind fuck of a film. Okay, so, biggest surprise. Biggest surprise was our next category.
I've got one more for bottom.
Oh, yep, go for it.
King Arthur.
Oh, yeah, I fell asleep in that.
Yeah, I mean, I had strangely high hopes. I don't know why. I don't even know why, but I'm like, no, this is going to be fun. Like, I saw the trailer, I'm like, it wasn't even that fun. It was just kind of stupid.
Gabe, we had it explained to us, like, within the first 20 minutes, Jay in the audience to, like, literally... Look up and tell us what was happening, because we were like, I don't know.
Right, that's
know.
The second most Cap Atkins movie.
Yeah, we were just completely incapable of grasping the subtleties of Guy Ritchie's amazing vision. Biggest surprise of the year?
I'm going to go Disaster Artist, not because it was really enjoyable, because it actually, like, got me emotionally. Like,
Yeah.
I was expecting it to be, like, a bit fanservicing, which I was ready for. I'm like, great, just give me, like, backstory and redo it. I don't care. Like, that's amazing. But, it is such a tragic tale, and they really got that across, that Tommy's just trying so hard and he's never gonna get what he wants. He doesn't want to be the villain, but you are the villain. Like, if you play the villain, you might have some level of success.
Disaster Artist, I don't know, it's we've spoken about The Room before, and it's just a fascinating story in that, if you try hard enough, you can get what you want. It might not be in the way you want
and
it.
And if you have $6 million.
Well, there is that slight get out of jail free card that Wizzo had. Disaster Artist was great. I actually think, and I've covered this in my favorite film, but I think Homecoming was.
Yeah, I had that as a special mention. Yeah.
Probably Last Jedi as well, just in terms of two films that I honestly walked in being like, whatever.
Well, The Last Jedi for me, but that's because I'm not Like, I liked the original Star Wars films, just, like, nostalgia. I mean, my brothers were really into them. But I did not like, what, The Force Awakens? That was the one 2 years ago?
Yes.
I did not.
Why are you
I
on
just,
this podcast?
I did you fall, really you, didn't give a shit. I really
did you
didn't.
Did fall asleep?
Possibly. Oh, God. It's entirely possible. I just cared so little about that film, and I really didn't want to see The Last Jedi because of it. But I loved The Last Jedi, so that was the biggest surprise for me.
And do you think, for both of you, do you think that was because you'd been set up by previous films in these franchises that didn't meet expectations.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So basically, lower the bar, and you're going to have a great time.
Always.
If anything, a lesson to take from 2017.
Right, yeah.
Biggest disappointment of the year?
Look, for me, and this might be a bit controversial, but Baby Driver was my... Yeah. Not because it was a bad film, but again, Edgar Wright is such a great director, like, his previous films were so sensational. And this was just as tightly structured and as fast-paced and had the same action and, like, Easter eggs that you would get from the rest of his films. But story-wise, it didn't hit the normal beats. Like, there were pretty big plot holes, in my opinion, that was just a bit lacking. Like, it was still fun and exciting and everything like that, but, yeah, like, it didn't really hit those notes.
It was very stylishly made, but...
Yes.
It, like, the characters were very hollow, the script was very hollow. I mean, we did an episode on it, Kat.
Right, well, Kat's episode on it was one of my favourite of the year.
Yeah.
Because you fixed... Like, again, it wasn't even,
it
wasn't
made
even
up
that bad
of
a film.
Episode,
right.
Preemptively.
Greatest thing.
But
we've
those,
done.
Those, there's only like a few big plot holes that I found really hard to forgive because I've got a high opinion of him that Kath, you fixed.
Well,
so,
from,
like, if I'd seen that film, I generally would have probably had it in my top five, but.
Yeah, well, I think it was my biggest disappointment, but not because it was the worst film, certainly not, but just because for me, I felt like the problems were so obvious and so easily fixed, and it was so frustrating that some, you know, there was so much that was good in it that it was just so easy to fix it, and I was like, that was so disappointing that it came so close and just really missed it.
Baby Driver might be mine as well. I don't know. There was nothing this year that I think most films I went into this year, obviously I went into with like really low expectations. I mean, maybe, I guess The Dinner would be there for a disappointment because like I expected to not be kicked in the dick repeatedly.
Papa Berg Mozart set you
like
up a treat.
That in and of itself was this, but not because I walked in there being like, oh, this film's going to be amazing. This is like a film I've never heard of. Why am I watching it, Dad? Thanks.
Well, yeah, I think for this year, the films that you thought were going to be good were mostly good or surprisingly good. And the films you thought were very bad, they were bad.
I think my biggest disappointment of the year was like Three Billboards being postponed till next year, but then I got to see it anyway.
Ooh,
so
aren't you a cheeky boy?
What about TV? Favorite TV of the year?
TV was, for me, like, way stronger than film. Like, if I think about what I enjoyed this year at TV, far surpasses it. Big Little Lies is my number one. I thought that was, like, a perfect season of television. It's amazing. And now, looking at Reese Witherspoon, like, I'll watch anything she touches at this point. She's done so many really great pieces of cinema, but also now television. Big Little Lies, Smilf, and The Sinner. But I haven't finished The Sinner, so maybe people tell me even.
I haven't seen any of those.
But it's still, I have finished, and that is so good. Like, it's just watch it. It's only six episodes, and it's so...
What about it is so great?
It's funny. Oh, I'm bad at selling things. It's really funny, and it's just such an eclectic group of voices that are really well done. Okay. And you never feel like, you know, any one character is... You know, obviously there's a character that's dealing with a drug addiction or recovering from a drug addiction, and you never feel like their story is like, oh, this is what drug addiction is about. It's just a little slice of life. And there's so many characters in the show that you really feel like you kind of just get this really organic, realistic little slice of life. And Connie Britton is so fun. Who plays the mum? Christy. Rosie O'Donnell? Is that her name? Yes. Rosie O'Donnell is so good, and I don't know her. I've heard of her, but I didn't know her, and she's amazing in it. Like, it's just, it's funny, it's heartfelt, the performances are great, and it's just, it's everything I want in a TV show.
Cool.
It's, watch it.
I think, for me, I'm going to sound like the biggest cliche here, but whatever, I don't care. Favorite TV, like, BoJack Horseman and Rick and Morty both blew me away this year. BoJack Horseman has been doing it for years. Rick and Morty I've always enjoyed, but just that Tales from the Citadel episode? Oh, God, like, you saw that coming.
Right. Well, it starts off with a joke about, like, Atlantis
and
pussy
just,
or whatever.
Yeah, and then just went to places I did not see coming. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, it's one of the things where, obviously, we've spoken this in Toxic Fandom thing, but I almost feel, like, guilty liking Rick and Morty because there are so many fuckwit fans. But then and people are like, Rick and Morty's for smart people. I'm like, no, it's just good.
It's good storytelling.
Like,
it's funny.
Smarter shows. And And well, BoJack just sort of continued a superlative run. I mean, last year wasn't amazing, but this year went to some really beautiful places, I thought.
Hmm.
Better Call Saul, which has been consistently great.
Right,
for a while.
I think that was your answer last year.
Yeah, that was really, that was not as good as it was last year. But I do have a favorite TV episode this year.
Okay.
Has anybody except for me watched Bates Motel?
Oh, yeah. Cool.
So to me, it was Bates Motel this year took on the plot of Psycho, and it subverted it in really clever ways, particularly in its handling of the shower scene. Had an episode built around building up to the shower scene.
Played by Rihanna, right?
Well, yeah. So Marion Crane was played by Rihanna, but what they did that was so, I don't want to spoil it, but they just did something with the shower scene that the whole episode, you think you know how it's going to go because it's following the movie almost beat for beat.
Yeah.
And then, because obviously, like, Psycho is an hour and a half long, or a 2 hour long film. Bates Motel is a 5 season long TV show. Over the course of its run, Bates Motel has, like, explored a lot of different themes. It's gone things a lot deeper than Psycho has. It's a very different beast. And it's gotten to that point where it's a very different beast. The point where the shower scene would not necessarily be a logical climax. The shower scene as it happened in the movie would not be a logical climax
right.
for Bates Motel.
We've seen it. We know
and
it's going to happen.
And so it took the framework of that event and twisted it in a way that thematically tied into what Bates Motel has been all about for its whole run.
Yeah.
And when they did it, and I'm a huge, huge fan of Psycho. It's possibly my all-time favorite movie. And when it got to that point where I knew what was coming and the way the show handled it, and when about 30 seconds before the scene happens, you realize what they're going to do with it.
Okay.
I don't think the last time I had this reaction to a TV show was when Gus Fring's face gets blown off in Breaking Bad.
Oh, okay.
When that happened in Breaking Bad, I remember standing up and screaming this, like, guttural, nonsensical, like, just pure wail of emotion at the screen.
Right.
And that's what this episode of Bates Motel
did. That doesn't surprise me at all.
I just got
that was your reaction.
And the sound that escaped me was, like, just the sound of pure catharsis, maybe?
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was just...
Was it the sound of, like, a dinosaur as the asteroid was coming, but they accepted it? In the moment.
It was maybe the sound of like a dinosaur in climax as an asteroid approaches.
Okay. Look, I avoided the dinosaur orgasm, but go
and
for
like,
it.
Fear and pleasure combine in this moment of like, I'm going to die, I accept it, and I'm currently a triceratops embedded in another triceratops. And maybe that might be an accurate description for the noise that I made during Bates Motel's variation.
I want to feel that.
Scene.
I want to feel that
Watch
emotion.
Bates Motel. All right. Okay, so maybe go back in time to when you're like 13. Watch Psycho for the first time.
Okay,
become
you'll
inspired
see that.
By it. Watch it again several times a year. Build a lasting love for that franchise.
Yeah.
Watch Bates Motel, go through the kind of rough early seasons, have your doubts about it, get season 4 when it gets really good, realize it's amazing, get excited about the fact that it's getting better, get season 5, watch it remount your favorite film. I wish I hadn't said remount after an analogy about fucking triceratopses, but anyway, here we are. And then maybe you can feel like a modicum of what I felt in that moment.
All right, let me write that down. So,
long sort of way around. That episode of Bates Motel was probably one of my all-time favorite TV moments.
Yes, okay.
It was really, really something.
I'm like, I'm jealous
at the end
of
Hannibal
point.
Season 1.
Yeah.
Like, when
right,
Will and Hannibal
okay.
are like, just in that moment of, I guess, an image that you've grown up with and been in love with from a franchise or a property or a movie or book or whatever that you love. And that moment at the end of Hannibal Season 1 where Will Graham is behind bars and Hannibal Lecter's the agent visiting him and they have that moment and that music comes in from the film Hannibal. And I remember watching it and something like, there are tears running down my face. What has happened to me? It was like that.
Okay.
It was probably the only other time I felt that like combination of a TV show operating at the absolute top of its game, and yet somehow that's how you pander to nostalgia, Star Wars.
Right.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
You do it, but have it be good. It's as simple as
this
that.
Is the opposite.
It's not that hard, right?
This is the opposite of what you felt watching Justice League.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Oh
sorry, anyway,
God, that's powerful.
On that demo, what TV did you like this year?
For me, Stranger Things. Season 2.
Oh, yeah.
And not because like it did better than Season 1, because it was as good as, which is so hard to do. Like, it's the sequel, because they even
decided to call it Stranger Things 2 instead of Stranger Things Season 2, which it is. But anyway, but no, it was as good. The characters are consistently amazing, if not, they probably get better even with the characters like Hopper in particular, and then cool guy, I'm blanking on his name.
Oh, Steve Harrington.
Steve Harrington was so great. And same for the drama. Obviously, episode 7, we'll push that to the side. But the rest of it.
I was retract everything I said about Basement Hotel and be like, episode 7 of Stranger Things season 2 was the TV highlight of the year.
Yeah, episode 7 was confusing, but the rest of it was solid gold. Like, I just had such a great time watching it. Like,
yeah,
it I finished great. And I just want more of these characters and this world they've created. Like, it was so engaging and had the right combination of horror and adventure and humor. It was,
it's funny because great. people have the cynicism towards, I definitely did going in, the cynicism towards Stranger Things, where it's like, obviously for the last few years, kind of, and a lot of films have capitalized on this, like 80s nostalgia has been enormous.
Yeah.
And I even thought Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah.
Totally right. Missed it, like, visually yeah. The music.
And so, like, I guess with Stranger Things, I was kind of like, maybe in the year between season 1 and 2, I was kind of like, oh, that's all it is. I'm not that excited about season 2.
Yeah.
And I watched, I'm like, no, it's actually just great entertainment. Like, yes. It's great characters. It's a great story. It's really engaging. I do wonder if episode 7 is kind of a warning that it's very much in its comfort zone. It wasn't a season of TV that I thought exceeded or did anything particularly daring. It just sort of built on season 1 very solidly and comfortably.
Like I said, I don't know if I particularly wanted it to. I was more than happy staying in my comfort zone and having a great time.
It's kind of comfort food. And then episode 7 was the one time it was like, oh, let's try something different. And it did not
work.
And
it fell flat. Yeah, which is like, oh, I'm confident there's a season 3 or Stranger Things 3 coming.
3 and 4,
yeah.
I think you can.
3 and 4, right. I see, like, even them having a long arc, I take as confidence. Although, yeah, if they follow the trail of season 7, it might be a worry.
Oh, Serious Unfortunate Events.
Yeah.
That was this year, wasn't it? Right at the start, which is why I think it sort of set my mind. But fuck, that was good.
Right. And when you've got a series of books like that one, to transfer that to television is a huge undertaking.
And to do it so faithfully, but faithfully to the spirit of the books while still kind of remixing certain parts. That was brilliant.
Great,
that was
morbid, fantastic, horrible time.
Such a beautiful, beautiful show. Yeah.
Damien, what did you make of American Gods? Because I know you were really excited about that.
I was. I really loved it. I saw it as a very different beast from the book.
Right.
But that just might be a personal thing, because I read the book the way I read the book, and their interpretation of it didn't really match up. But I still really enjoyed it. It had the usual Brian Fuller sort of huge, intense sort of visuals and all the rest, but that made sense to me, because you're dealing with gods. Like, this isn't a normal day walking around. This is a huge event. So I really enjoyed it.
Would you put it in your top 5?
I haven't, truth be told, but I actually think, because it was a great year for television.
Yeah. I agree.
Because I've also got, just to rattle off a few, The Good Place. Thank you. Yeah. Awesome. Quality television. If you haven't watched it, you should watch it.
Oh, is that the one with Kirsten Bell?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ted Danson.
Yeah.
It just gets better the more you watch it. And, like, they're taking this crazy theme of, you know, the afterlife and ethics and all the rest, and they're making it funny. And they're like, Ted Danson is a bloody dreamboat. Like, he's amazing in it. So watch it for him alone. Loch Ness. What else do you need? So that was excellent television. And then also, I mean, we had Fargo this year. Season 3 was great.
Oh, Legion. Yeah. I forget about that.
Legion came out this year. And then, biggest surprise television-wise, American Vandal.
Oh!
Oh, my God.
It's like, these things are like, I guess because there's just so much content at the moment.
Yeah.
That things just kind of like I, before doing this episode, I had to be like, all right, movies that came out in 2017. Oh, yeah, that did.
Yeah.
American Vandal. Jesus, what a surprise.
Right. It came from nowhere. It did things like that were ballsy as fuck and landed it.
And
like,
it started because, like, for those who don't know, I think we spoke about this on one of our AGM episodes, another plug for Sans Pants Plus.
Do it.
It was like this show that started, and I was like, all right, it's like a parody of Serial or Making a Murderer or whatever. Like, you know, I get it. It's all very funny and clever and stuff. But that was kind of like, how are you going to sustain this for like 8 episodes or whatever it was? And then it just got deeper.
It got deeper,
and it
so
used
deep.
That framework as a way to explore some really interesting themes. The point where, like, I remember it finished, and I was like lying in bed staring at the roof, being like, "Holy shit, I've got so much to think about."
I thought about it for days.
Right,
like,
a show that is primarily dick jokes at the start, and you're like, but you're still loving the dick jokes. Great dick jokes.
Great dick jokes.
But
And then, it goes into the whole, how much is public, of what we do is public knowledge? And
so for those who don't know, it's basically a variation on true crime documentary where a kid gets expelled from school for allegedly drawing 27 dicks on teachers' cars. And that's it. And that's the question. Who drew the dicks? That's what happens. And basically, it's like one of the kids who, is a wannabe filmmaker sort of makes a documentary about the dicks being drawn on the cars.
But it's a very serious.
They analyze the ball hairs and how the ball hairs were drawn, and they're like, Dylan's dicks that he drew previously didn't have ball hairs,
right,
but the ones on the car have ball hairs, and could he have drawn this? So we're going to recreate the drawing of the dicks to figure out if he could have done it in the time allotted.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's ridiculously analytical. But then it does really clever things where it's like, there are just these little details in the background that slowly kind of come to the forefront. And then it does this really weird thing about halfway through where the idea is that the episodes being made are being released on YouTube by the characters. Then halfway through he goes, oh, so the episodes we already made have all started coming out on YouTube.
Mm.
And then the characters in the show, some of whom are suspects, some of whom are involved, whatever, start responding to the show.
Yeah.
And start being like, well, you said this about us. What about, you've left this out.
Right.
No, you've made us look really bad for your purposes, for entertainment and things like that. And the way that kind of parallel plotting of the who drew the dicks with the how do people respond to being exposed in this way,
right,
which makes you really think about shows like Serial, S-Town, Making
yes.
Murderer,
and
about real people. And how does people respond? And then the way that comes together in the final episode is like a gut punch. It just leaves you being like, and it doesn't feel like it's going in a crazy dark place that's beyond what the show already established. It just does this thing, this scene at the end where you're like, oh shit.
Mm.
It just leaves you thinking about so many things.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's an active investigation. And so it kind of challenges that notion of, well, how much information is the public entitled to?
Yeah.
Right, while it's actively being investigated. Because, obviously Serial, that's very prevalent with what's going on and the ethics of journalism and public knowledge. And I was thinking about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, because Serial was interesting because it's you expose a lot of things about a lot of people, but at the same time, you're trying to solve a murder. S-Town, on the other hand, it's like, no, you're just delving into this guy's life, exposing everything about him.
Yeah.
For the purposes of art, I guess. And I loved S-Town, but having watched American Vandal, it does leave you really, really chewing on the ethics of that, which I found fascinating.
Mm.
Even the Jinx throws in, I won't spoil anything, but the Jinx throws another kind of concept in there as well.
Yeah.
Watch the Jinx if you haven't watched that. That is,
I haven't seen it. You've recommended it a lot.
The best true crime I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And then the last one on my good TV for the year, I think I actually had more than five because it's too good, Handmaid's Tale. It was good in that it was so unsettling. It was I haven't read the novel, so I kind of went in not knowing what to expect, but it is so relevant to today's day and age that you're like, holy shit, we're a step away from this being reality. Terrifying to watch, but so engaging, amazing performances, shot beautifully, but equally, it's just, you're gut-wrenched every episode by the heightened levels of atrocities they're performing, but you can see happening. You can see it being one step away. All you got to do is go on Twitter for an hour and you're like, oh fuck, we're doomed. this is going to happen. So yeah, just amazing television, amazing storytelling, and the character, the performances were exceptional.
So I guess steering kind of to be a little bit self-indulgent, with our own show. Next question is, what episode of Movie Maintenance that was not your own pitch was your favorite this year? So for me, it was probably Handsome Tom's Sons of the West.
Yeah, that was
because I knew nothing about footy, and I listened to it, and I was like, and other people said to me, they're like, oh, well, he just told you what happened. It's not a film, it's just a description.
But arguably,
of the things that
happened. But
I didn't know any of that. I've got no investment in footy, and I was sitting there listening, holy shit.
Yeah, but
things
he
about
dramatized
football.
It.
Yeah, it was great. And, an honorable mention, I couldn't tell you if it was the best or the worst, but what Kath did to High School Musical, I can't.
The best for the record.
I was in that room and it was just I remember walking out and just being like, I don't know what I just went through.
Neither do I, to be honest with you.
I can't tell if I just listened to a direct, pure distillation of insanity injected into my ears.
You did.
Or it was a warped level of genius that
I'm unable
to comprehend.
She broke you.
Oh,
That was my intention. I remember sitting down being I'm going to write the pitch. And I was I just want to make Handsome Tom and Gabe laugh. And I want to shock them. Like, yeah. I want them to be surprised. And I literally,
big fucking 5 minutes
and I was like, I don't think this is crazy enough. Like, you that
were fine. No, you were fine then. Well, I think the first warning sign was like when you were putting the pitch together that day, and I think I came home from something and you were just like, hey, did they have gunpowder in 1697? And I was like...
No, I said, did they have guns? I was like, yeah. Why do guns
invited? Like, high school musical?
We're right? That's what these that one, the classic trilogy.
It should have been, I was writing it, I literally wrote it in like a pen I used for art on a giant art pad. Because I couldn't find lines. So Kath had
like this comically large art pad, and she puts the page and she goes, oh wait, no, that's back here. And I'm like, and I couldn't tell if she'd like actually just like written it not sequentially, or if she just like locked herself in a room, taken a whole bunch of LSD, threw ideas at the page, and then decided on the day in what sequence they went in, and kind of pieced it together that way.
If you can believe it, there were actually, because I did get a little...
lost.
Like, confused with my...
your own bit.
Surprise, surprise.
Of, like, coloured text and writing. There were pages missing. There was more. There was a lot. There were beats, like...
What wasn't in that? You had Al Gore and Elon Musk merged with Vanessa Hudson's...
Hive mind.
And then Hudson's died... And then Al Gore in Vanessa Hudson's body went back in time and married George H.W. Bush to make sure that George Bush Jr. was never born. And then spent the rest of her / his life with in High School Musical 3. What the... Oh, God. Yeah, so...
explained it. There's nothing more needed.
Honourable mention. And that was maybe the third craziest thing that happened in that
pitch. Yeah.
What about you, Drob?
I'm going to give props to you for The Room.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's... Because The Room... Mainly because, like, how do you fix a movie like The Room? It can't be fixed. It's made to be bad. It's the worst best film or the best worst film... And you did. You made me have a great old time and threw a twist at me that was fucking sensational.
Well, the weird thing about that episode was that I honestly went into it being like, I'm gonna fix The Room. I'm gonna legitimately try to make The Room a good film. And I got to the end and I was like, hang on. And this should have occurred to me from the start. I was like, nobody wants The Room to be fixed.
No.
And then as I went through it and I'd kind of like peppered in little references and I was like, it's a fucking origin story.
Yeah, dude.
And then when I got, and literally that just like hit me on the day where I was like, this is gonna be the worst pitch I've ever done. And I did it and you're like, oh my God, I didn't see the twist coming. I was like, yeah, plan that from the beginning.
Yeah, that was how I went for that. So yeah, that was my favorite. I had such a great time. And like I was saying to Holly before I went in, I'm like, I don't know what Gabe's gonna do. Like, I think he's bitten off more than he can chew. Like, the guy's either an idiot or a genius or, you know, just dumb in general. But I love you. But no, yeah, you fucking brought it. It was amazing.
Well, Gabe, my favorite was Allied, which was actually the first episode I was ever on, I think.
Is that why?
Yeah, probably. Yes, it was exciting. You are. New to me. No, but genuinely, it was such a solid fix. I didn't hate Allied. And then when you pitched it to me, I was like, shit, that's a much nicer, and like, I, of all the films that I've listened to, that's the one that I would be really excited to go and see, like, pay money and go see your version of Allied. I thought it was really clean and I liked it.
Oh, thank you. Cool, so now I'm blushing. So moving on past us, do we think in summation, was it a good year for film and TV?
For TV, definitely.
Yeah,
yes.
100% film, for TV.
Pretty good. There were some great films. There were also some not so great films.
Look, and there's a lot I didn't see. Like, I haven't seen It. I haven't seen Wind River. I haven't seen a lot of other things that people are like. I haven't seen Logan Lucky. There's a lot of things people said were great that I haven't seen. So I guess my judgment is somewhat impaired here.
Yeah, I feel a bit the same. Yeah,
I definitely was a bit like, it was telling that none of my top five of the year were 5-star films.
Yeah,
they were all. There was nothing I saw this year that I really was like, "Holy shit!" Like,
yeah, like last year we had like Hunt for the Wilder People, which
Wilder People,
like, and as, like, I didn't think there was many independent films that were like standouts, which was a bit of like, as I had like 3 bloody comic book films on there, which fine, but
last year had Wilder People and Sing Street, which are both films that I was like, those are gonna be films I'm gonna rewatch again and again for a long time. This year, like, I mean, yeah, Sing Street, I would, Big Sick, I would rewatch. I'm obviously gonna see Last Jedi again, stuff like that, but. There was nothing like one of those films I was like, this is going to be like a perennial favorite going forward. Right. And Sing Street and Wilder People were both unquestionably that.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I think it was an okay year for film. I think there were good films. I thought it was a
very average year for film.
Yeah.
I was pretty underwhelmed on the whole.
Blockbusters were good. Like, you know, Wonder Woman.
Some.
Like, I mean, comic book films generally had a really good year in that I think it was the year that they sort of realized that you can't. The biggest problem with Justice League was the fact that it was just a superhero film, whereas, like, Wonder Woman was like, World War II story, World War One story.
Yeah.
Thor Ragnarok?
Thor Ragnarok was I'm going to do like a zany sort of 80s weird space opera slash weird comedy. Spider-Man Homecoming was like, I'll be a high school story. Yeah. So I think it was good in that comic book films did sort of realize that they can't just be superhero films because that's just not good enough anymore.
Yeah.
The point where superheroes were a novelty is long gone.
Right.
And the fact that we've developed to the point where we could recognize that is really good. Also, Last Jedi was encouraging for Star Wars in that it was like, no, you can't just rely on nostalgia anymore. You have to move forward.
Which I agree. Like, so, you've literally got an endless universe, galaxy, whatever. Show some more stories. Like, let's branch out a bit. Like, I'm saying this from a guy who is not like a massive Star Wars nut. So maybe that's part of it. But I just think there's so much more room in the Star Wars universe. Let's explore it.
And they've started to, for sure.
Yeah, and they've started to with this one, yeah.
Which, like, for better or worse, and obviously people have problems with it and stuff, but they took risks, and that's a big thing for a current-day Star Wars film.
Yes.
Like, I have to give a hats off for that. So what are we looking forward to coming into next year? Apart from Jurassic World.
I'm looking forward to watching you watch Jurassic World.
Yeah.
Can I please be there?
Yeah.
Because I know, like, I'm going to have a good time, but I'm going to have a better time if I'm with you. So, like, everyone come and watch a good game.
Beautiful sentence.
Yeah. Because I'm very sweet. Trailer, like, when Jurassic World came out, I had an amazing time. I saw it several times. I loved every time. I thought it was the best. But, like, in the years since, I've been like, yeah, I can recognize the flaws. I can recognize why it's objectively not a great film and whatever. But I haven't really watched it recently. And so when the trailer for Fallen Kingdom came out, I remember when they were like, oh, a trailer's coming out this week. And I was like, I don't care. It's just another Jurassic Park and whatever. As I'm like refreshing. And then the trailer came out. I was like, I had this like moment of like, oh my God. And then I was like, no, it's cool. Yeah. It's fine. It was just being on Jurassic Park. I'm watching. I put on the trailer and I started watching it and I was like, oh yeah, Chris Pratt, Bryce Dallas Howard. Cool. More force chemistry. Yeah. Cool. T-Rex. And then like from that point onward, the T-Rex bites the Carnotaurus while a volcanoes going off and lots of dinosaurs fall off a cliff and then Blue turns up and I was like, I am so on board. Right. How did I ever doubt this film?
I saw the trailer by Gar. I was like just scrolling through my different social medias and on every one you had shared the link to the trailer. I'm like, I better watch this, I guess. Like,
I'm so excited for that movie. I just can't wait.
I know, yeah.
It's just because, like, Jurassic World was just proof of that franchise. It's like, quality can get fucked. We're just going to throw dinosaurs and stuff. Like, what more do you want? There are enough good films out there. We don't need that shit in our lives.
We don't need that shit in our lives.
What's that for? Who wants to sit there and have themes and issues and ideas? Like, who needs that? Who needs cinema to, like, be brave and revolutionary when you've got fucking dinosaurs? That's fine.
So my films for next year, I'm really keen to see The Shape of Water, which I think is, I don't know if it's already out, but I'm super keen. Like, reviews have been sensational.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fishman, bring it on. Give me some Fishman love. Yes.
Is it like a Creature from Black Lagoon film?
I mean, I generally don't know, but that's part of the excitement. Like, all I know is that this, like, a woman who's, I think, deaf falls in love with a fishman. I'm like, oh, okay. Yes. Let's see what he does with that.
Particularly odd itch to have that you need scratch demo. But
I didn't know I had it, but it's there. I found that out.
No, I'm keen for that too.
Yeah.
Infinity War looks good.
Black Panther looks good.
I mean, they look Marvel good. Like, they look good time. Probably never watched it again. But but what else? Aquaman.
Oh man.
So excited.
I mean, yeah.
Give me some more of that.
I mean, the one scene we had with him in the water, they couldn't even talk. They couldn't talk without a bubble around them. Which the movie going to be, Gabe? Like, I don't know.
They'll have like a bubble around their mouth, maybe. That's what I think. Like a little.
But that's
like,
ridiculous.
Smart. Oh, I know.
They live in the water. Not... Like, you've got to talk to each other.
But James Wan has said that they're not going to be talking in bubbles in the film.
Then why have it in Justice League?
Why would you?
You don't want uniformity across your movies. That's ridiculous.
Hey, to be fair, they couldn't go back and change that because like they spent too much money on fixing Henry Cavill's
the mustache,
which was an unmitigated success.
Yeah,
look, that looks so natural. Yeah,
give me Superman with a mustache.
It was just, it was the best.
I'm really excited for Lady Bird, which I think is already out in America, but I know it's coming out January.
Yeah,
was that like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah, it's getting really good. 100. And I love
it.
Whoa. Amazing. Okay.
So that's, I can't really think of much else that's like,
Tomb Raider, I'm a bit on board for.
Han Solo.
Yeah, I'm excited for Tomb Raider.
Red Sparrow looks pretty good.
Red Sparrow, I'm really excited for Red Sparrow.
Yeah,
massively.
I
know there's one I'm missing. I remember there's one, but my brain's
shit.
It's funny because, like, nowadays it's sort of like, yeah, you know, we're going to get DC films that will continue this entertaining train wreck. We're going to get Marvel films that will be, like, good. Star Wars films that kind of...
Marvel films that will show DC, hey, here's how you do it.
Yeah, here's how you do it without being especially memorable or exciting. And then like, outside of that, it's going to be the indie films that surprise us, like...
Right.
Lady Birds, or like, I know that I was ready for Three Billboards, but like a lot of people wouldn't know have known what that was, and then now it's like up for Oscars and Golden Globes and everything, now it's like it'll probably put Martin McDonagh on the map in a really big way.
The Post is another one.
Yeah,
Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep. I mean, like it's Oscar bait.
Oscar baity,
but yeah, it's probably still good though, right?
Yeah. Like, well, not? I mean, it'll be very competent if nothing else.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm sure it'll be high quality. I don't know if I'm.
Yeah, but after watching Justice League, I'm like, okay, give me a bit of that.
Yeah. After watching Justice League, like getting kicked in the teeth a couple of times.
Yeah, it feels good. You're like, thanks, guys. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Great.
Curb stomp.
At least, like, that was just damage to my body, not my soul.
Yeah.
So that in and of itself gets points.
Yeah.
So I think that pretty much wraps us up in terms of what we thought about 2017.
That was 2017.
That was 2017. So just in conclusion, I guess, thank you to everyone here today
who came out
to see us and be here in the audience and laugh and make us feel like we're funny. That was really nice. And thanks to everyone listening and stuff like that. Like, it's been a really good year for our show. Like, we've sort of, you know, brought in new people. We've had some really cool pitches. We've had some really good stuff going on. We've launched with Maintenance Presents, which has been really, really exciting.
It's been a lot of fun,
for us and the handful of people listening to it. And then we've had the Move Maintenance AGM, which is another Sans Pants Plus thing. So, like, that's,
Sign up to Sans Pants Plus.
$5 a month and you get to listen to
us. Do we
need
to say it again? Sign up to Sans Pants Plus.
Every when we can be bothered. so that's a winning selling point there for you guys there. But yeah, like a massive, massive thank you to everyone.
Yeah, thanks very much, everyone.
It's good. It makes it all awesome. So yeah, on that note, thanks for all being here. I've been Gabe.
I've been Damien.
I've been Kath.
And for those listening at home, you know where to get in touch with us. At MM Sans Pants on Twitter. Otherwise, I'm at Goburgmoser.
I'm at Midday Pajamas.
I'm at
Kath Atkins 5.
Once. Kath just get it
Atkins
right.
5.
One. Just
you know
one.
This. It's your name and the digit that is 5. It's, if it, wait.
No, if I was still Kath your friend, I'd be really disappointed.
It's
Kath Atkins 5.
Kath Atkins 5. Kath Atkins 5. Kath Atkins 5.
It's your name and your favourite number.
No, but sometimes I put ATK. So sometimes it's Kath and sometimes it's Katharim.
Well, on Twitter, it's Kath Atkins 5.
Kath Atkins 5.
You've ruined
got
the podcast.
It.
Kath Atkins 5. You've ruined the episode. And,
yeah, I don't want to be here anymore. Thank you all for coming.
Thanks,
guys.
Everyone.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. Movie Maintenance is going to take a short break over the summer and we'll be back refreshed in 2018, ready to fix all the misfires that cinema throws at us. Check out our Twitter or Sans Pants Facebook page to keep up to date with our releases. See you later.